Hello, and welcome to The Body Protest.
In this podcast, we combine storytelling with science to better understand how we think, feel, and relate to our bodies. I'm Nadia Craddock, and I'm a body image researcher.
And I'm Honey Ross, writer and activist. This podcast is brought to you by The Pink Protest. Today, we are speaking with Chidera Ejiru, who you may know as the Slum Flower.
We talk about body acceptance, self-worth, cancel culture, dating, and her new book, How to Get Over a Boy.
Chidera appeared on our radar in 2017 when she started the hashtag Saggy Boobs Matter movement on Instagram. But since then, she's published two books, performed a TED Talk, and even stars in the most recent Tinder campaign.
Chidera is bold and funny and oozes warmth and charisma. And she has some strong opinions.
You might not agree with everything she has to say, but she will definitely make you think.
Yeah, a few things to flag. In a lot of her thinking, she positions men as a problem. I guess for us, we would probably replace the word men with the patriarchy. Also, as Honey mentions during the interview, the conversation is skewed towards heteronormative relationships, so bear that in mind.
We had a really interesting conversation about dating politics and how our views diverged. But I really love how Chidera is challenging women to know their worth and ask for more.
Chidera certainly surprised me at times, and there are some things that she said that I want to reflect more on. But what I love most about Chidera's message is about knowing your worth and separating your worth from your appearance.
Anyway, let's hear from Chidera.
Chidera, thank you so much for joining us on the Body Protest podcast. We're so excited to speak to you.
Thanks for having me. I've been looking so forward to this conversation and you guys are amazing.
Oh, we think the same about you.
Yeah,
so, start. So you are a writer, an activist, a speaker. I feel like you do so many things. You're in so many different things. On the way, I was like looking you up. I just did a Google search and it's like Financial Times, the Today Programme. I was like, what? This girl is everywhere. And you kind of came up in the public domain anyway from the saggy boobs.
Yeah, the saggy boobs.
The saggy boobs matter. Saggy boobs. Viral.
How would you describe your job title? Do you have a description for that? Or is it kind of the multi-hyphenate queen?
Definitely multi-hyphenate, yeah. But for a shorter version, I just like to call myself a troublemaker.
A troublemaker, yeah.
We don't get change without trouble. And troublemakers are really the ones who create change because we cause discomfort and we remind people that we can never settle with what's just around us. We have to keep going. And so that's why I love endorsing troublemakers. I feel like we need a lot more trouble in this world.
Yeah, I love that. Stir shit up.
Ah, so let's talk about Saggy Boobs. We mentioned it. Where did it come up from? Did you have that vision that it would go viral when you posted it from an Instagram post, right?
Like, yeah, I definitely didn't have a vision of it going viral. I've always been someone who's been quite talky-talky on the internet. And I love speaking up about things that really matter to me. So with Saggy Boobs Matter, it was literally just, I was uploading a picture and the hashtag just naturally came to me as I was typing the caption. Mm-hmm. And I just put it in the caption. And from there was when the story literally began. And since then, so many women have continuously been approaching me saying that this movement has encouraged them to finally see beauty and value in their body for the first time. I had a 14-year-old message me yesterday literally saying that she's just never liked her boobs, even though she's just a C-cup, which is like relatively small, but yet it goes to show that you can have small boobs and still not like them. You can have big boobs and still not like them. It's like every single woman is convinced to believe that there's something about her that just is never going to be good enough, and our boobs tend to be the place that people target for that level of abuse and to convince us that we aren't good enough because your boobs are a sexualized body part. Right. And so something like Saggy Boobs Matter, of course it's controversial because it's saying that, you know, the state that you think is unattractive actually is attractive and it does matter. And like the funny thing, the most ironic thing about all this is that I've actually never come across a man who has rejected or declined the opportunity to be within a very close proximity of my boobs. It's never happened. And it's always guys who are the ones that are reinforcing these horrible ideas and standards. But men do not have a choice and they don't deserve to have that choice. Well, so
it's like, Stephen, you'd pay £200 to lick the sole of my foot. Like, let's not pretend.
There are
like,
men who will do
know,
that. There are men who
but
will
it's
do
like,
that.
You know, it's that thing of like, everyone's reinforcing these horrible stereotypes on the internet and kind of these negative perceptions of what a woman's body should be. But then in private, they're literally like, oh, I love it though. And you're like, it's so like, come on, like, let's just be honest.
Of course. I completely agree, which is why I'm so passionate about women understanding that as you are right now, you're so powerful. Like, you're someone's dream. you're someone's ideal type. There's just someone out there for you, but you shouldn't have to wait for that person to appear in your life for you to finally feel deserving and ready to be loved by yourself. I think you should just love yourself anyway and let those who are meant for you naturally gravitate towards you and enter your life. But whether they're here or not, you still just focus on loving you. That's the ultimate core of the message of Saggy Boobs Matter.
Yeah, it's so lovely. Was your journey loving your boobs a kind of straight shoot, or was it a complicated one? Would you be happy to tell us a bit more about that?
It was quite complicated, because when I was younger, I used to always say that once I'm 18 and I get my first job, I'm saving up for a boob job. There I was, ambitious at like age 16, thinking that at age 18 I'd get a job that'll pay me high enough to be able to save up for an £8,000 plus procedure. Like, definitely was a dreamer. But it was complicated because it wasn't like the media helped. There was just always imagery of people who had just gotten their boobs done, or people who were being praised for naturally having perky boobs. It was, I never saw any celebrity proudly wear their boobs in the saggy form. It was a lot of breast tape and a lot of all that. And it's not to say that they are the reason why I feel the way I feel about my body, but it's that there is intentional repetition of imagery that's put in place to create an idea that this is how women should look. And for me, I don't see any value in chasing a version of yourself that pleases others more than it pleases you. And it's not that I'm against plastic surgery. I'm never going to be against plastic surgery, because for some people, plastic surgery is identity affirming, especially for trans and non-binary people. So it's never going to be my place to just say plastic surgery is bad, full stop. But what I will always question is the fact that we live in a world where we feel the need to change ourselves to begin with. That's where the real conversation is.
Yeah, I kind of am completely with you on that. I think it's hard with cosmetic plastic surgery. I think it gets to a point where, because stuff is available, because you can have these procedures, doesn't mean you need to have them, right? But the virtue of them being there, I think, creates a need and creates a demand. So if boob jobs didn't exist, would everyone want one? You know, it's that kind of thing. It's interesting to hear that was where you were coming from, and then that came. So how did that journey transition for you then? From kind of wanting a boob job to actually being like, no, you know what, like, I'm going to embrace how I am.
What was the turning point?
Yeah.
Because I got bored of hating myself, and I realised, you know what, I actually cannot even afford plastic surgery, so I guess the cheaper option is to just love myself. I began on that journey, and I realised that, you know what, like, I'm an amazing person, and my personality is not in my boobs. Like, eyes are literally up here, my brain is up here. Like, there are other things about me that are amazing, and I don't have to focus on my boobs. But also, my relationship with my body, 2 years on from Saggy Boobs Matter, has still changed a lot now, where I've learned to understand from a more sexual side of my relationship with myself that literally every facet and inch of my body is incredibly sexy to someone, especially my feet. I've got great feet. And why that's important to mention is because my boobs, I suddenly stopped even thinking about my boobs. It's now like other things, like, wow, I realise I have nice hands, and like, I like my hands, and I realise, oh, I have a beautiful skin tone and like complexion, and like, oh, I have great legs, and like, oh, I have like a really, really amazing face. Like, I was able to, I've now become more committed to seeing the beauty in other parts of myself. And it's meant that I don't even focus on my boobs anymore. In fact, my boobs are now like an accessory for me, and I intentionally wear them saggy because that's part of the look, it's part of the outfit. And it's not that I live for the compliments, but I get way more compliments when I'm actually not wearing a bra than I do when I am wearing a bra. And it's not that I'm doing it, you know, for people to always praise me, but it's that I'm so glad that I'm able to find this comfort in myself at any stage or any way that I choose to dress up. And I'm not even against bras or never wear anything that pushes up, because it's like, once in a while you'll catch me in a cute little white lace bra as part of the outfit, And other times you'll see me sagging. But the whole point of the message and movement is that it is okay for your boobs to appear saggy. Like, it's not a death sentence. Mm. Like, there is more to you and there will always be more to you.
I think that's what's really resonated with people, is that you are just bold in that, and you're like, you know what, I'm worth more than my boobs. And I love that line about, like, my personality is not in my boobs. Mm. Like completely. And I think that comes across, and I think that's why it's part of a bigger confidence, right? Which I think is
it also feels like a complete renegotiation of completely challenging the male gaze and being like, this is the female gaze now. And I love you saying, like, I've got beautiful hands, my feet are great, you know. Mm-hmm. It's that thing of going, like, actually, women haven't been allowed to express their personal desires about themselves up until really recently, and I feel like you're a real champion for that, and it's
Thank
really important
you. And another thing that's really changed my mind, especially when it comes to sexuality and a woman's body, is I've recently been lucky enough to be friends with women that are dominatrixes and women who practice sex work, right? And each and every woman looks so different to each other. Mm. There's one woman that I met, and she's like, maybe I'd say she's a size 28 or 24. Mm-hmm. Like, she's visibly fat, she's really big. She has like maybe 3 or 4 male servants who basically, they serve her by buying her gifts, like either it's from her wish list or just the gifts that they know that she likes. They send her gift cards all the time. They do her shopping for her. They tidy her house for her. And they receive pleasure from being able to be close enough to her. And this is someone who, if we didn't know what she does, let's say we saw a random picture of her on the internet based on the current culture and social landscape, most people will assume, oh, no one's going to be attracted to her because she's fat or because she's dark skin or because she's got big saggy boobs. And it's like, there's a whole world out there full of women who've been able to harness their power. And it goes to show you that men have no say in what's attractive. They don't deserve to have a say in what's attractive, and they never will have a say in what's attractive unless we actually give their opinions validity by even entertaining them. Mm. It's understanding as well that there is power in rejecting anything that doesn't honour you, especially men. And I really, really learnt that, because as much as I'm a person who is straight, it means that unfortunately I'm attracted to men. And it means that when you're attracted to men in this kind of current social climate, you often do feel the need to observe your body through the male gaze. And that's what I've been resisting. And the more I resist it, the more attractive and powerful I become, because men are drawn to my power and they're drawn to my indifference to them, and they're drawn to the fact that I'm so self-absorbed and obsessed with my own beauty.
Mm.
So it's very interesting, and I wish more women understood that you don't necessarily have to be a dominatrix to be powerful, but it's understanding that your beauty has nothing to do with how anybody sees you. It's all about how you see you.
Well, it's a kind of a reclamation of your body, isn't it? And going entirely, like, this is mine again. And, like, you're just lucky how you get to see it.
Literally. You know? But that is the mindset.
So how did you get there? Like, what was the journey on you getting to this place of confidence in yourself? Because I know it's a long journey, and that's one thing I really love in your new book, which we'll talk a bit more about later, but you're very honest about how it's a very long journey. And I get a lot of messages on my social media of people going, like, how did you get so confident? I'm like, years of therapy. Like, years of therapy and a lot of hard work, and it's exhausting, and I'm still doing the work to this day.
And I
love that you're honest about that, because I think people are like, can I buy, like, a magic hat that will make me like myself? It's like, no, there's no magic hat.
Magic hat.
You have to be the hat.
Be the hat.
What was your hat? Why am
I'm
I talking about
therapy
this?
As well. Mm. I started therapy 2 years ago, and even though there isn't like a one core problem that needs quote unquote fixing, it's more that I like having a person in my life whose sole intention and purpose while we are together is helping me get to the root of my behavior. Mm. Because as much as I will always try to act and move from a place of pure intention, there are still behaviors that I need to correct. And I like being called out in a very safe and loving environment. But in terms of my journey towards being so bold in myself, it came from me realizing that I'm the only me in this world. And there will never be, like, even both of you here, there will never be another individual you or you. There'll just be never another you. And that is what keeps me inspired. It's like, if I'm going to be the only me, then I'm going to be as much of me as I can while there's still air in my lungs. But what's ironic about this is that what's motivated and encouraged me to be more of myself is witnessing cancel culture and how fickle and destructive, violent and unforgiving it is. It's made me realise that since there is no one size fits all way to do this perfectly, like there's just no way to avoid it, then I'm going to be as much of myself as I can, because nothing I ever do will be enough for people anyway. So I'm aiming to be enough for myself.
So I spoke to Jamila Jamil last year, and
she is,
and she spoke about cancel culture too. And I think when you're bold and opinionated, which I would say that you and Jamila are, I think it invites debate, right?
And
I think there is something about learning out loud and
making mistakes in public so you're able to learn from them, I guess.
Yeah,
but remember that social media now is in a very voyeuristic place, right, where everyone's witnessing everyone's movements. But remember back in the day, and it's not even that long ago, we had, like, remember Reddit and, like, maybe even Tumblr, but I'd say Reddit mainly as a forum. There were forums where loads of people who were, like, 15, 17, 19 years old would be absolute idiots. But because they had anonymity, and because the format and structure of Reddit didn't allow for, like, cancel culture, because it's literally a place where you just comment in under blog posts, it meant that people who existed at the time on Reddit were able to grow out of that, delete those accounts probably don't exist anymore. They can create a new one and start fresh, so no one knows their own trail of growth. But now we have things like Twitter and Instagram, which are a lot more visual heavy and are geared towards immediate conversation due to, like, the very low character count that you have. It means that we're not afforded that anonymity anymore. Every single movement you make is digitally recorded, and anybody can choose to search and find it. So it's like, I think the fact that social media has evolved into this kind of machine now where everybody's growth is recorded, it means that we have a lot less empathy for each other, because back in the day when it was just Reddit and other and other forum sites, people, I don't think, were as destructive, because it was a lot harder to identify them anyway. Like, that anonymity existed.
I also find it really interesting that I think specifically women and marginalised people in general are held to a higher standard than anyone else. Like, you know, you don't see people, you know, obviously men do get cancelled, but it's not in the same way, because it doesn't seem to have a lasting impact. You know what I mean? It's like, especially...
they have 9 lives.
100%. You know, you're even seeing that now with the kind of hangover of Me Too, of all of these men weaseling their way back into the kind of public sphere, and you're like, hey, you just did something very illegal, but they've come back because, like you said, 9 lives, whereas there are so many women I can think of who have maybe made one or two missteps and done so, gone.
Yeah, and I think, I wondered, like, you're a young black woman who's got opinions, right? So I think then how does that play out, and how does that impact how people then view you on social media, and then that how that people respond in that way.
It comes down to selective empathy, for sure. And depending on your identity cocktail. So it's like, okay, you're black. Okay, are you cisgender? Are you trans? Like, it all, like, it totals up, and that's how people decide how much empathy you're afforded. So with me, because I am a black woman, cisgender, heterosexual, I'm often the target for people to use as a way to virtue signal at my expense. And what I mean by that is, because I'm very likable, that makes me very, very dislikable. When you're a likable person, and I feel like Jamila Jamil that you mentioned earlier is a brilliant example. She's amazing and talented and very likable, but that's what also makes her dislikable, because people will always look for loopholes in anything she does. No matter how hard she tries, people will constantly focus on looking for loopholes, because it comes down to them wanting to have this aha moment where they, like, lift off the cloth and reveal the magician's secrets. All along, you were not a magician, you were just a scammer. Like, that's the feeling people get from doing that.
Yeah.
And it's very, very violent and destructive, and I want no parts in it. But it's not something that I feel like I can avoid, because I can't stop people from having an opinion of me. And me disappearing and me never speaking up again will not be the solution. Because even if I chose to be silent, someone's going to be like, it's very telling that you're silent during this time. You should be out on the front line. You just can't win.
No.
There's no right way to exist as long as you are visible and black and a woman on social media.
It's so interesting as well with cancel culture. It just leaves absolutely no room for growth. I mean, that's just an observation, is it doesn't allow people to kind of learn, or it doesn't show people that that's the thing you're meant to do. It shows people that you're meant to disappear and hide into a corner and be like, oh yeah, you got me.
Because that's how those people cope with their mistakes. Someone taught them that they're not allowed to ever make a mistake. You can tell how someone treats themselves by how they handle other people's mistakes.
So true.
It's very, very evident. And as much as it's on the internet and people can dismiss it as, no, we're just saying what's right and calling out what's wrong and just standing up for justice, but it's like, you're not a freedom fighter in real life. You probably don't even live up to your own expectations in real life, offline. So I'm not going to take you seriously. I'm just going to mute your account. And then when you mute people's accounts, you don't get called hostile or that you are ignoring the voices of those. So you can just never win. So I never tried to win. I'm just like, mind my business.
And also muting self-care. You've got to do it. Like muting, blocking, like that is like the purest form of self-care.
For
like,
real.
Like, I don't need to hear this. This is my space. You're not welcome in this
Completely
space.
Agree
it's heavenly. Should we talk about your book?
Let's talk about my book.
So this is your second book.
Yes.
Following the very successful What a Time to Be Alone,
Thank
which is
you.
Fantastic. If you haven't read it, you should pick up a copy. Do you want to tell us a bit about the one that's coming our way?
Yes. It's called How to Get Over a Boy. Out everywhere, February 6th. And I mean, as much as the title is quite self-explanatory, I'll still dive in and explain the motivation behind it, which is I just want to see a world where there are no longer women and young girls crying over men and boys, because men and boys are just never worth crying over. There are more important things to cry over, like your dog having an injured knee. I think that's way more important than crying over some guy who probably didn't even deserve access to you anyway, if you really, really, really zoom in on the situation. And so the aim of this book is to equip women with especially emotional tools to learn to develop a level of indifference. It doesn't mean stop caring and become apathetic, but it just means you don't have to maneuver dating with desperation if you are someone who's attracted to men. Because when you move through dating or just interact with men from a place of desperation, they can tell. And because they're people, in the same way we can tell when someone is desperate, you can tell when a guy's desperate. And that heavily influences the way that you interact with him, because then you know, oh, he's going to do what I say anyway, so I don't even need to be that present with him, or I don't even need to do what I would have done to get more of his attention, because he's already given me loads of attention. But guys also see things in that way, and unfortunately for guys, it's important for women to understand that men don't love like women do, because men and women are not socialized the same. So the more that you're able to take men away from the center of your world and put yourself in the center instead, it means that your life is governed by you, and any man who wants closeness to you or any boy who wants closeness to you will have to go out of his way to really show you and prove to you that he's deserving of a very, very important spot. Because men should compete for your attention, and they should compete to be able to be close to you, because when we look at what the world looks like, men are genuinely responsible for everything that's wrong with it, including war, including child marriage, including women's shortened lifespans. Like, we have to look at the statistics, we have to look at the facts and understand that you're not going to get far in life by babying men and spoon feeding them and trying to build them. They can do that by themselves. They will be fine if you leave them, and you do not have to dedicate your life to trying to love a man into who you believe he has the hashtag potential to be, because you're abandoning your own potential and you're now doing charity work that has little to no benefit, because you're not even gaining from what you're doing. And a lot of women find this sense of illusion in building men, or this sense of illusion in building a version of their self for some guy that they like. And then you often hear stories about, you know, he's suddenly not interested in me anymore, or I feel like we don't have that spark anymore. I feel like he's interested in other people. Like, you always hear a lot of disastrous stories after all that hard work. So it's like, if it's not working for you, why are you still doing it? Maybe what you should try doing instead is pour all that energy into yourself, become an absolute boss, and make men audition for your attention. That's the world we deserve to see, and it's what men deserve as well.
So it's fantastic, essentially, and very, very relevant. There's a line, I think, in the beginning, we got the pleasure of getting an early copy, but probably by the time this is out, the book will be out, so everyone should go and purchase it. One of the lines in the book was...
if you could pick the version of you that comes after the breakup, you would pick that person infinitely over, you know...
Who you are now.
Who you are now. And I thought that was so powerful because it really captures the hellish journey of, like, recovering from, you know, a heartbreak and dealing with that kind of thing. But also how powerful you become after it when you so really powerful. Have nothing else to lose and you're like, I don't give a fuck anymore.
I feel like I'm on Super Saiyan level 6, and that doesn't even exist in Dragon Ball Z, but Super Saiyan level 6 after all the men I've dated and rejected, I become more powerful each time.
Yeah, I'm like, I swallow part of their soul every time and just grow bigger. I'm like a transformer.
Like a ginormous Loch Ness monster.
Exactly.
I'd love to see like it, babe.
Oh my god, so funny.
The book starts and you talk about body confidence, you talk about body image and what that means, and there's a couple of things that really stood out to me that I thought was really interesting. I would love for you to say a bit more, because you talk about a difference between body and beauty acceptance, and that to me, especially from a research perspective, I would love you to like unpack that a bit for me and tell me your thesis on that.
Thank you. So body acceptance and beauty acceptance, in my opinion, they have differences. Of course there are many similarities, but there are differences, because beauty acceptance is more about seeing yourself as a completed human being who has so much wonder and value and insight to bring to this world, and that is what makes you beautiful. Like your power is what makes people attracted to you, especially men. But body acceptance is an important and slightly different discussion, because we all have an inside voice, and there are so many people who, as much as they might not have been diagnosed, they probably are living with body dysmorphia. When you now link that to yourself in the context of dating, what happens a lot is I see so many women say things like, maybe he didn't like me because I'm fat. Maybe he didn't like me because of my eczema on my hands. Like, you'd be surprised the kind of things that women have said as the reason why this guy probably didn't like them, when actually the reason could have been, maybe you were just coming off a bit too desperate and he just didn't feel stimulated by that. It's nothing even to do with how you look, because if you, the exact same person, how you look, entered that situation from a place of severe power and confidence, it's not that he might have, it's not that you might have still ended up dating him, but it's that if it never worked out, you won't leave thinking, oh, it didn't work out because I'm fat. You leave thinking, it didn't work out because this guy is just, he's not powerful enough. He cannot handle the power. I'm going to engulf him anyway.
My therapist has spoken to me a couple of times about something called convincing behaviours, when you're trying to convince someone to be with you, when you're kind of doing things like...
Interesting.
You know, and I think a lot of people are, specifically women, because of the things we've been shown from a young age, we are taught to do convincing behaviours. They're often very connected with codependency and things like kind of being like, I've got to save you, I've got to make you better, like,
wow,
please stay.
That's so interesting.
And there's, I feel like your book is the antithesis of that, of kind of going like, they should be kind of, you know, rather than you convincing them,
he
should be convincing you.
You.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. And it's a kind
pitch.
Of... Yeah, I just, it made me, when I was reading it, I was like, wow, this is exactly the antidote to convincing behaviours.
You're so right, because I used to do a lot of convincing behaviours, but I'd do it in a very passive, and I'd weave it into my humour so you can't tell that I'm trying to convince you. But it doesn't matter how you hide it or how much,
they
how
can smell
we,
it.
People can tell when you really want them to like you.
Yeah.
And that just doesn't, even if it's not in a dating situation, it doesn't make you look good when you're trying to overcompensate, because when you're operating from a place of, I'm content, I have a lot to offer. If you don't care about what I have to offer, that's no loss. That's okay. Because maybe you're not in a place in life where you're receptive. While I was writing this book, I actually put myself in the dating scene just to experiment and have some material to work from. And boy, did I have a lot. The main thing that I found was I had to snap out of the conditioning of, like you said, being in the convincing position, where before I was aware of my behavior, I used to find myself overcompensating, trying to be too funny, trying to be too cute, trying to be too everything at once. For a guy who realistically probably wouldn't have been good enough for me anyway. But then when I completely flipped it and decided I'm going to completely relax and not do anything to try and impress him, I found that guys would now be going above and beyond to impress me. And I'd still be like, eh, he's corny, I don't like him, or eh, I don't like the fact that he talks too much, eh, I don't like the fact that he interrupts me. Like, I'm now the one who's picky. Women deserve to be picky. In fact, we should be picky in a world where men are the biggest threat to our existence, statistically.
There's another point that I want to pick up from the book, and we kind of touched on this a little bit. We're talking about appearance compliments, and you said, I'm going to quote it, so I've got it here, try not to form attachments to compliments about your appearance. And I'd love you to talk more about that, because I think it's important.
Yeah, and that's a really important one, because I don't know if you've been seeing the conversations people are having about Adele, who is an absolutely powerful, beautiful, talented woman at all sizes that she's ever been. But she's recently lost a lot of weight. Mm-hmm. Not sure how she did it, not sure why she did it, doesn't matter. But the way people are talking about her has been very concerning. They're now saying things like, oh my gosh, she looks amazing. And like, wow, her ex-husband must be so jealous. I'm like, what a massive loss for him. And it's not just Adele I see this happen with. A lot of women who are going through, you know, eating disorders or just having a really hard time or having mental health issues and weight loss happens to happen during that period, they've often said that that's the time when they received the most compliments from people. And now if they were to have formed attachments to those compliments, imagine how much of a toll that would have taken on their health. So that's why I made the point of that, being careful about the kind of compliments that you get attached to, because if those compliments are aimed at something that has happened as a result of you not taking care of yourself, then imagine how much further into the darkness that's going to take you. So you just have to be super careful. But also, aside from that, sometimes men just use compliments to weave a certain bit of conditioning into you. It's like kind of like they're training you or like grooming you a little. And I'll explain this further. So sometimes men will compliment you on something that they want to control you on. So if a guy is the kind that wants to be controlling, let's say you have really beautiful long hair, Nadia, right? And let's say there's a day he sees you and you've tied your hair up, so it kind of looks like you've got a bit of a bob. He might say something like, oh, I kind of like it when you have your hair like that. And then he'll keep on reinforcing that. And eventually he'll now one day tell you that he wants you to cut your hair because he thinks he'll find it really hot. And you thinking, oh my God, he's going to be so impressed. He's going to find me so hot if my hair is short, even though you really love your hair and you've always loved having long hair. You cut it because, you know, you want to be hot for him and he says he likes it. But actually that's just him being controlling, and it's not about what he likes. He doesn't get to dictate here. If you decide to cut your hair on your own accord, he should be grateful that he gets to witness what you look like with your hair shorter. Like, he has no say. He has no say at all. And men often use compliments to set up an environment where they can slowly start controlling you, which is why it's important to already like yourself. So when a man tells you he likes something, you say, I know. Thank you for spotting that. I agree. In fact, you know what? I would even look better in purple. Can you imagine how I'd look in purple? Like, I like anytime a guy compliments me, of course I say thank you, depending on what mood I'm in. But for the most part, I make it clear in that moment that I'm aware. So this is not an insecure one. I'm not someone that you can try and talk into becoming your pet. It's not going to happen around here.
It's interesting hearing you say that, because it's very much the you don't know you're beautiful One Direction narrative, which is
toxic. That narrative for a reason.
And I'm like, I'm fully aware.
Yeah, I can let you know why I find beautiful. Do you want a list?
Also as well, there's that kind of very toxic thing of like, oh no, I know because men have been heckling me from the street since I grew boobs. Like, you know, it's that kind of abusive thing of we're not allowed to know our own worth. Whereas it's like, it's up to a man to see that and to project that onto us.
In the same way, women are not allowed to adore their own sexuality or even monetize it, but men are allowed to wank to us.
Yeah.
So it's like, I can't monetize my sexuality, aka be a sex worker, but you're allowed to watch porn and like nut in a sock after seeing me. So the same nakedness that you benefit off, I'm not allowed to. So misogyny is everywhere around us, and we lose nothing by resisting it. we think we lose out on men, like, oh no, no man's gonna like me if I'm too stan. But it's like, don't worry about losing out on men. They're everywhere. They're gonna be around as long as you're gonna be around. And you gain nothing by downsizing your desires for them. You gain nothing. It's not worked for us so far. Yeah. Clearly it hasn't worked. So something has to change.
Yeah. Wow. This kind of feeds really nicely back into you, because it was on your Instagram you were talking about the dating app Chronicles, which I think you kind of referenced. Yes. Of you getting some material for the book and going back out there into the dating scene, which is horrible and very brave of you to do.
Thank you. But fellow comrade here, thank you.
When I was watching those Instagram stories, I felt quite challenged by them, because
I
would never ever expect to, you know, you were kind of going like, if he doesn't take me to this bar, no. If he doesn't,
oh, hell yeah,
the standards were really high, and I think I couldn't work out. I was like, I don't know. I think I just was very much like, this is a woman who's asking for what she wants, and she knows what she wants, but it's something I personally have never done in my dating life, which is, you know, probably a reason why my love life is horrible. But
it's going to get better soon after you read this book, I'm telling you.
100%. I've got, you know, good things on the horizon. But I would love to hear a bit more about where that came from. How did you establish the rules of the dating app Chronicles?
I love that question. So first of all, men never feel ashamed about asking for more. In fact, they all have the nerve and the gusto to ask you to leave the comfort, warmth and safety of your home to come and eat popcorn and watch Netflix with them so they can finger you and send you back home in an Uber that you will pay for.
Yeah.
Like, you haven't already paid for the Uber to their house in the dark. Yeah, in this nighttime, economy. In this economy. They will never feel ashamed about doing that. They will never feel ashamed about asking you, what are you doing, 45 minutes before asking if they can come see you. They don't respect your time. They don't fear asking for what they want. But suddenly women feel bad saying, I don't want to go to a coffee shop, I want to go to a bar. Take me somewhere nice if you're going to waste my time. We suddenly feel like we're asking for too much. And even asking to go to a nice place for a man to audition for your attention is not you asking for too much, because he's the one who wants your time. He's the one who wants the opportunity to get to know you. So you're not doing anything wrong by saying, well, if you want access to an hour out of my important 24 hours, then here's where it's going to be. It's going to be on my shots.
Yeah.
And you are paying. I'm not going to pay to get to know someone who I might not even like by the end of the day anyway. Why am I doing? There's no reason why I should be doing that. There's no reason that justifies it. So with Dating App Chronicles, which for those who don't know is a mini series I used to do on my Instagram stories, where I would share screenshots from various interactions on different dating apps with men, and I would blur out their face, blur out their names so you can't identify them, and I would basically annotate on the screen the part where he had me messed up, or the part where I felt like, this is an example of a red flag. This is an example of what I do want to hear. So I was basically giving people like a live feed of how my own brain works when I'm interacting with guys. Right. And it was really useful, because people were able to see it in action. Because when it's written down on a piece of paper or in a tweet or on a page in front of you, like, ask for more, you deserve more. People are like, yeah, I agree, I deserve more. But then when it's time to actually act like you deserve more, suddenly you get cold feet and you're now scared to ask a guy for more. You're now scared to say, no, call me an Uber, or you're not seeing me. Like, don't be afraid to say no to these guys.
Well, it's that distance between, you know, saying it and being like, yeah, I wear it on a t-shirt, and then actually putting it in practice. Yeah, exactly. And it's like, it's hard, but it's scary, especially if you've been conditioned your entire life to not, that you're not worthy of more, then to suddenly Absolutely. Ask for more, it's fucking terrifying.
That's why the only way to overcome the fear is to literally start now. The next guy you talk to, let him be experiment number one. you're gonna make sure, if you're talking to him on a dating app, you're gonna make sure that you're not gonna give him your number until after you meet. And that has saved me so much. I didn't even make that rule up. That rule was actually created by this amazing dating coach called Imani Yvonne, and she goes on Instagram by the handle Actual Black Mermaid. She's iconic, right, for so many reasons. And what made me drawn to her work was the fact that, one, she's got amazing skills when it comes to dressing up and doing her makeup and her wigs. But two, she's a fat black woman. Mm-hmm. And for a fat black woman to be a dating coach, a lot of people were skeptical, because they had this, their own preconceived idea that how can a fat woman tell me how to date? In my world, fat women are undesirable. That's what everyone thinks. On the internet, fat women are undesirable. In real life, fat women are winning.
But I was also like, on the internet, like, you should see my DMs. Like, again, like, it's like, I do better than all of my friends romantically.
Girl, I have friends who are fat that men pay them to put them on a leash. Like, it's not a joke.
That's me.
It's not a joke. Yeah, it's not a joke.
I wish.
It's not a joke.
You know, it's interesting, because especially, I think fat women have been taught, well, basically fat women aren't allowed to be sexual beings, and so when you do see that, that's very challenging for a lot of people. But it's like, we're here, we're out here, we're doing,
and you're not going to stop being here, and you're not going to stop being gorgeous.
But being brutally honest, I have to say, I think one of the reasons I found I was challenged by your dating app chronicles was like, I didn't feel like it would be applicable to a fat woman.
A lot of people say that,
and it's so interesting to hear you say the root of it is actually coming from a fat black woman.
Yeah,
it's so powerful.
She taught
no
me
idea.
So much. Yeah, she invented the rule of no exchanging numbers until after you meet. She invented these three questions that are so powerful to ask guys on a date. And like, the first time you do it, you might feel a bit nervous because you're scared you're not going to get an answer you like. But for me, it's like, I shouldn't be the one that's scared of hearing the wrong answer. Yeah. The guy should be scared of giving me the wrong answer. And those three questions that Imani Yvonne invented, number one is, what's the most romantic thing you've ever done for a woman? Question number two is, and this one is definitely a rigged trick question, but the way that you phrase it, it's clear that there's a right answer. Like, it's very obvious. So this question is, would you consider yourself the romantic type of guy who surprises women with gifts, money, flowers, or B, the friend type of guy who just sends text messages? So you're supposed to tell me that you are guy number one, because that's the kind of guy I want to be around. I don't want no text messages. I'm a busy woman who's got a lot to be doing. Why am I texting a grown man? What are we texting about? If you want to see me, arrange a date. If you want to talk to me, arrange a reason for me to talk to you. I'm not going to be on the phone texting you. We're not 19 years old. I'm not doing that. And that's lazy, because if a man really does want to be in your life, he will make a very, very important effort to show you. And effort costs money. If you want to go to a nice place, it costs money. If you want to do fun activities, it costs money. So we can't deny the fact that money is an important factor to consider when choosing male partners. And people don't really like to hear that, because they're like, well, I'm anti-capitalist, and like, I believe liberation for all. And it's like, yes, that's a cute concept, I'm behind it. But unfortunately, the world is not going to change in our lifetime. And whilst we are trying to move towards a world that is anti-capitalist and is liberal for all, what are our lives going to look like in that process? Because if you are going to completely endorse a-capitalism, then you basically need to just morph into a goat that just eats grass and lives outside and does not interact with anything that's man-made, because that's contributing to capitalism. Yeah. So it's like, we all make compromises in our lives whilst we do try to maintain our radical and progressive ideas. It's okay to be anti-capitalism, but it's also okay to go to nice places and try great food at the expense of men's pockets in a world where men are the reason why you make significantly less than you could have been making anyway.
I think it's interesting, because I've always very much been, you know, I don't agree with chivalry. Like, I think chivalry's kind of innately anti-feminist, just where it comes from. And in
what's
terms
your
of,
understanding of what do you mean
well,
by chivalry?
Chivalry comes from kind of the idea that a man needs to be a knight to save you. That literally is where it comes from. I don't need to be saved. I work hard. I will split the bill. Like, I'll split the bill every day of the week. I personally don't.
With your male, like, if you had a male partner.
Basically. If I had a male partner, yeah, 100%. I, like, you know, if obviously if you're together and it's a different thing, and you'd be like, oh, you get this one, sweetheart, we'll do rounds, you know, whatever. But on
I'm
dates,
so fascinated by that.
I so admire that you, to me, you represent the extreme end of kind of going like,
absolutely,
do not settle for crumbs. You deserve the world. Whereas, like, though it's not necessarily the way I live, I so love that. I think it's so important to kind of have that strong opinion so other women can go, this is doable. Like, I can ask for more.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I admire it.
Thank you. And it's so fascinating to meet and speak with someone who exists on the other end of the spectrum, where you feel like you actually prefer to split bills. And I actually get a lot of women who interact with my work or message me. Their delivery is never as nice as yours, unfortunately. They're like, what? Do you realise how disempowering it is for a guy to pay for something for you?
For women to come for you and be like, well, actually, blah, 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 that's the anti-feminist
that
thing
is the
there, which is going,
there,
you know, it's completely up to you, how you want to live your life, how you want to operate in a romantic situation, that's down to you.
Absolutely.
And also, to be honest, if someone's like, I'd love to buy this dinner for you, I wouldn't say no, like, I wouldn't be rude. And maybe it's a thing of coming, you know, growing up as a fat woman and feeling like, maybe I don't deserve more, but I will go into a situation and be like,
you deserve all the meals, baby. Oh, I'm fine as hell.
I know. And I've eaten most of them. Good. And I love it.
You deserve it.
But it's that thing of...
Is it the idea... Because I get where you're coming from, right? Is it the idea... And maybe this, maybe you might not agree with this, but is it the idea that a lot of women have, which is that if a guy pays for something for you, then you suddenly are indebted to him in some capacity, or that he now has some sort of, like,
definitely
power
on a first
over
date.
You?
100% on
That's
a first
so
date.
Fascinating.
You know, I think I found it very interesting seeing you be like, take me to a lovely restaurant and do this, because I'd be like, my worst nightmare is like being like in a sky bar with a stranger who's bought me a drink, because I'm like, oh my god, they're gonna think I owe them something and I just hate you.
Never.
And I want to run, which obviously is not the case. To me, I was like, first date, lowest stakes possible. I'm like let's literally like meet on the street, like, hi, and I'll run
by
away
by the bins,
like trench coat, like back behind a cinema.
No,
that sounds
girl.
Like, no, but like, I think it's,
I know what you mean.
For me, it's like, men can be scary, low stakes. I don't want to be that invested, and I want to be able to get
so,
in.
So
get
see
out.
That part you said about men can be scary.
Yeah.
That's the ultimate premise of why I'm like, men are so scary to me that I am not going to date a guy who has little to nothing to lose. I will always go for guys who have a lot to lose, because I feel less scared when I'm around someone who's, I have your business card, fam. Like, you want to try anything? No, because honestly, no. When guys who are in positions of a lot more power in their work are dating women, they have to be a lot more careful.
Yeah.
A lot more careful, as opposed to, I don't know, some guy who you might have met who, I don't know, works in Pret or something. Like, he has a lot less to lose, so he can afford to pull a fast one or to do something funny. But on the other side of that, I can understand why a lot of women are scared of men with money. For me, I'm scared of all men. To me, all men have equal capacity to be abusive.
Mm.
Because even if you're dating a guy who maybe hasn't got as much going for him, he can be very emotionally manipulative. In fact, Nigeria has one of the highest statistics for domestic violence. And there are a lot of working class families in Nigeria. So there's this idea that, well, if you go for a guy who's rich or has a lot going for him, then he's automatically going to be financially abusive. But it's like, that fear can only exist in your mind if you are someone who doesn't believe that you are an intelligent person who has a lot going for yourself. Because it's like, for me, I'm focused on making my own money, and the reason why I still even entertain men is because from now on, their purpose in my life is to take me closer to who and where I want to be. They are all stepping stones in my life, and I'll never feel ashamed about saying that, because women are always stepping stones for men. We make men better people. Women deserve to have space to dive into their passions. Women do not deserve to be spending 8 hours of their day working to pay for things like their rent and things like that, when they could be using that same money and that same time to be paying for and investing in their passion. Like, we deserve space for that. And that's why there's a whole section in the book where I prioritize speaking about money a lot, because it is a very, very important tool. Mm. And a lot of women enter relationships prioritizing their feelings over the facts. And that gets dangerous if children become involved in that. For me personally, I do want to have children, and I couldn't imagine ever having a child intentionally with a man who does not have a lot going for him, because I want my kids to go to Montessori nursery, okay? I want my kids to be able to see turtles in real life, not just in the National Geographic book. I want them to be able to really, really experience life, especially black children.
Yeah.
They deserve that. And as much as people agree and believe in that, in terms of the idea of it, but when it comes down to the practicality of it, people are suddenly like against the idea of partnering intentionally with someone who has a lot of resources, because now it becomes, oh, you're a capitalist. But then when the story is more about creating a world where more black children are being born into environments where they are abundantly praised, celebrated, and encouraged to follow their passions because their parents can actually afford to give them more of their attention, people like that. So it's like, we have to be honest here about how and where we are placing ourselves in the context of the men that we intentionally welcome into our life, because men can either take you closer to who you want to be, or they will distract you and take you so far away from yourself that by the time you leave, you don't know who you are anymore. And that's not what I want to see happening anymore.
Thank you so much for joining us. I mean,
thank you for having me.
Such an amazing conversation. I love the way that you kind of challenge taboos, essentially talking about things. Like, I think even talking about money is such a taboo, especially
women are not allowed to talk about money, but men are.
As a black woman talking about money, like, it's so powerful to watch you do that. It's incredible, and you don't see that a lot. And I really appreciate.
I'm so glad that I had this conversation with you both. You're amazing, and it makes it even better that I discovered that you're an Aquarius and a Pisces. Like, get into it. You have an air sign, a water sign, and a fire sign.
Thank you for listening to the Body Protest podcast.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode. It would mean the world to us if you could subscribe, rate and review.
You can follow Honey on Instagram at HoneyKinney.
And you can follow Nadia at Nadia.Craddock.
This podcast is edited by the angels at Project Harness, Daisy and Rasheen.
And brought to you by the Pink Protest Podcast Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.